Hello, everybody. Welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And no Will Terry today. Will Terry is on assignment. He is doing a self-publishing project, and he'll be back to report on how that went. Today, we have a special interview with Kesh from India. He's an India-based artist, born and raised there. And you can find his work at keshart.in. So pull that up and look at that if you're not driving while you're listening to this, or if you're on the YouTube channel. Just pull that up and look at it and kind of surf your way around his Instagram account and his YouTube channel there. And this is a fascinating guy. I will tell you a little bit of our history. Me and Kesh, we met back in 2015 online. He approached me as a filmmaker and he said, hey, I would love to make some sort of short films for you and help you out with your YouTube channel or whatever you need. And I said, well, I'm going on this book tour for Little Bot and Sparrow. How about I just shoot a bunch of video and send you the files and you make some videos for me? And so if you go on my YouTube channel and you see my Little Bot and Sparrow sort of book tour videos, those were all edited by him. I did the footage, he did the rest. And I have a video on there, Finished Not Perfect, that was edited by Kesh as well. And so
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so those were done. We, like I said, I mean, we're coming close on knowing each other for 10 years now. It's amazing. And I've been on his podcast a couple times and I thought we got to get you on this one because I really want to talk to you about your side of things. So what'd you think of that episode, Lee, that interview?
He's a unique guy. Comes at it from a filmmaker background. I mean, I don't think we've met in any of our interviews. We've had that kind of thing. I mean, people interested in film, of course, but not just, you know, really all their art is kind of driven by film. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. He's got a totally unique take.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a guy who is self-taught, truly self-taught. He learned from YouTube, and he talks about that in the interview about the pros and cons of being, you know, like strictly self-taught. We get into motivation, like what should be motivating you, and what motivates him as an artist. We get into really deep into sacrifice and duty and like what kind of projects you should be drawn to as an artist. So it's a good episode.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, he's a deep guy and he thinks a lot about where he is and where he's going. Yeah, definitely a good one for anybody who's thinking about where their career's headed. This definitely pay attention to this one.
Cool. And with that, here's Kesh. All right, Kesh, thanks for joining us. And I just want, like, can you tell us the state of Kesh right now? Like, what are you doing? What's your day to day? Like, how would you define your career as it stands right now?
At this point, I would say my day to day. Well, so I'm just coming off of a huge project, which I sort of finished a year and a half, but it's been a year actually. So almost. So it's been a bit of a transitionary period where I'm trying to find my next project. So in the middle, I found my likeness or my passion for animation to some extent, or making animated films. So most of my days making illustrations, working on refining my existing art program, and then creating everlasting videos that I would want to watch myself for my YouTube channel, and writing quality newsletters every week, but that's not a big thing. It's only 20 to 30 minutes. And learning about business, actually, learning about startups, business, and how money-making works. That is sort of a procrastinatory, if that's a word, a thing. You know, that's what most of my days are like right now. I'm working on a short 6-page comic. That's a small thing. Mm-hmm. And weekly illustrations. Stuff like that. That's what most of my days look like.
That's really cool. How did you? That is quite a breadth of stuff to be worrying about all day. I don't know if worrying about, but like things on your plate. First off, I'm curious about that project that you just came off of a year ago, a year or so ago. This big project. Can you tell us about what that was? what led up to it and how it went.
Well, so I've always, so I used to be very, what do you say, overweight, like say 7 or 8 years back, probably 10 years back, actually. So mm-hmm. then I started using this program called P90X. I think you guys must have heard of that, right? Mm-hmm. It's oh, like yeah. the Tony Harden guy. Yeah, I love that guy. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I started using that. I got a bit fit, got into fitness, and it just went on. And then I started my art journey, trying to learn art. And I was like, I wish there was something that's like P90X, but for like guys who like to make cartoon characters, you know, it's like very simple stuff. It should be like just, you know, plug in, plug out, just show up for 30 minutes a day, have fun, mm-hmm. draw, and go home. You learn something and you do a workout, an art workout of sorts. So I started working on this program called Drawing Cam, which is sort of like P90X for art, which is what I like to call it. And I wanted to build it up like a product that I can be, that I myself can sort of use to some extent. Mm-hmm. And that thing took about 2 years to complete, unfortunately. It was like built in different phases and was just brutal. And it was quite the experience. And that taught me a lot about, say, starting projects, finishing projects, and what do you know, like more about art and how to run businesses, how to make products that makes money. And it was a nice experience, right? So I just came off that project. That was the thing, you know, that was the major thing.
Yeah. That's huge. I you know, if you go on your website, keshart.in.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, you click on Drawing Camp and you just have so much stuff there from beginning drawing to what like character design, simple anatomy, stuff like that. It's absolutely impressive what you're able to build for that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get into art?
How did I get into art? I mean, it was like I used to watch a lot of cartoons when I was a kid. Typical stuff, right? Like we watch a lot of things as kids. Movies, Jurassic Park is a big influence, meaning the emotion and the essence that Jurassic Park brings, as in like you have a world that you're sort of surrounded by and these characters that you're really interested in, and it's like, man, I want to build some stuff like that, right? So I was like getting into art like that. Just started drawing when I was a kid. Cartoons. Well, Cartoon Network was a big thing. Dexter's Lab, all the Samurai Jack stuff, Powerpuff Girls, big influence. So you used to, you know, watch a lot of these cartoons. Just drew, you know, I started drawing by looking at them, and yeah, just stuck with it. You know, stuck with it. That's how it is.
So how
did you get any kind of training or anything? Did you go to school for that, or did you just YouTube?
I YouTube my way into it. Just pure YouTube and also a lot of your videos, Jake. So, you know, watching, studying a lot of artists who I really like and going through their stuff, trying to understand core principles rather than trying to exactly copy what they actually did. And that was my thing. That was my spiel to some extent, just watching. That's one thing I do regret, though, meaning I wish I had, you know, I dropped my ego and took up some like mentorship or took up an online course or, you know, reached out to someone, say, hey, you know what, I'd like to mentor, you know, mentee under you. Let me add some value to your existing profession. You know, maybe just spend an hour here and there telling me what not to do. So that could save me 5 years of my time and maybe, right? So I wish I had done that.
So you feel like you sort of went the long way around
to
figure it all out on your own instead of the, you know, could have been streamlined maybe.
That is a little more. That is right. Yeah. That's possibly because of, you know, like one of the reasons could be, I'm just sharing this because, you know, there might be someone else who might sort of have the same obstacles, which is having too much ego as to saying that I want to be a self-taught artist, like taking that self-taught part to some end extreme and saying that, you know what, I'm not going to have any help. I'm just going to claim that I'm going to be a self-taught artist. But in reality, nobody is truly self-taught. You just build your base on the work of other people who came before you, and you sort of, you know, go from mm-hmm. there, right? So yeah,
so you're not in the trenches like trying to figure out perspective all on your own. You're
that you're like... that is right. Yeah I was literally like, why do they call it the horizon line? It's like it was that deep. It was pointless and useless. It's a freaking horizon, like draw a box, put it in your character, just go home, mm-hmm. make a comic, right? So it could have been that simple, but the upside though is it taught me how to learn, which was more of a very useful skill. I sort of took that skill and applied it everywhere in terms of, say, making videos or trying to learn anything very small in a business, like trying to take on criticisms to some extent. It's like, let me put myself through situations where I take a lot of criticisms and voluntarily, so that I can and voluntarily choose to respond to it in a decent way, so that I can build my level of criticism taking skills to some extent. So it has its upsides, downsides, but mostly I wish I'd taken up some mentors.
Right.
What was the biggest struggle to learn on your own in terms of the art stuff? Was it perspective, or was there anything you particularly, what were you naturally good at, and what was the struggle?
I think personally for me, I think, and I've also I'm speaking to a lot of artists in our community, right? It seems like people, including myself, I have a similar story, really good at copying things, right? Like really looking at things and copying things. But when it came to sort of even rendering, that's why I see a lot of artists, and I started out like this, which is we all start making these super hyper realistic drawings, you know, which are like exact replicas of, say, some game covers or some movie posters or something like that, or like of your favorite actor's portrait. And it was so easy to look at things and copy it. But once it came to sort of creating something from your imagination, that's where the problem comes in. It's like, I'm not able to visualize a particular character in a particular way, in a particular style even. And I'm not able to actually, even if I actually make that a reality, it does not look anything like the person who I want to make art like, right? So that was the biggest, I'd say, thing that I was struggling with, learning to draw characters from imagination.
A struggle a lot of people have. I mean, that's a tough one to go from, especially with how confident you can be when you're copying something, because there's a metric there, like, did you do it or not? And if it looks like it, then you're like, happy, hey, I copied the thing.
But when it's your own,
you don't know what you're actually doing wrong. When you're doing a copy, it's like, oh, my nose doesn't look right, because you can see the other nose right there.
Exactly.
So you can adjust it. But when you're making your own, there's no, you don't know when the cake is done, sort of idea.
you never know when it's done, and you never know if you have it actually right, or if you've sort of put the base right. You know, it's just like, did you put the frosting on top, or is it underneath? I mean, it's supposed to go last, right? You know, what did you guys struggle with when you know you were starting out?
I see what you're trying to do there. This is our podcast, not your podcast.
Ah, damn it. Come on. Trying to have a conversation here.
For me, painting came really easily and still does. Drawing, always a struggle. I have to work on it always. If I had to do one of my own books just in line work, not painting, but just line work, I would be over my own head. Like I wouldn't be able to do it. Like I just don't think in terms of line that well. So drawing, like to do basic drawings, to me, I'd rather almost like the book I'm working on now, I just go ahead and do little paintings, because it's easier for me to paint than to draw. And then that's always been that way. And so I had to really do my push-ups to try to get, and then, you know, I started teaching later and taught perspective and all that stuff. And it was always just like, oh man, here we go. Before I was doing a big demo, I get nervous and stuff.
Right. And I get you. Uh-huh. And
you're
still
good at line work, though.
Who?
No,
it's
Lee.
It's always a struggle, though, for me.
Lee, if you ever see his line work when he's actually does it, it's really good. It's nice stuff. So I don't, you know, it's amazing that that's a struggle for you.
It just looks clunky. You know, it didn't feel natural.
No, I think it's the Jordan's ankle situation right there. And it's like Jordan got hurt, and one of his ankles got hurt, mm-hmm. and then he came the next season, but that ankle was the strongest, right?
Mm. All right. Maybe, yeah. Because you've got to think about it a lot, you know?
Yeah. And on that case, for me, if I had to really see what my strong points were, it was like really trying to connect this sense of connection to a bigger world, and sort of taking that feeling and that emotion and the essence. At the end of the day, art is sort of about that, right? And sort of bringing it down to one container or vehicle, which is a character. And that seemed to be like my strong point right from the start. So, yeah. But other things were like... Yeah, I was not able to exactly sort of funnel those things in.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What? So here you are. You kind of self-taught or mm-hmm. learned how to do the craft.
Right.
What made you decide to go down the path that you're on versus, I don't know, getting a job at an animation studio or doing, you know, strictly comics? Why this version of Kesh?
I did get a job, actually. I did get a job at as a video producer. So before I started taking art very seriously, meaning trying to put in my deliberate practice repetitions, I had already put in like 5 years of work worth of work for video production, meaning getting good at video or trying to at least understand video. It's like I saw Jurassic Park. It's like, man, I'm going to make films. Then I saw Disney. It's like, I'm going to make my films with drawings. It's like, great deal, right? So I got a job as a video producer first because I thought I'll work on that. And I was in that job for like a period of 8 or 9 months. And it seemed like I didn't have the proclivity, or it could be just impatience, that mm-hmm. to actually take at least work for someone. I was not able to do that. I was not able to be in that situation for an extended period of time. It was despite me loving the thing that I wanted to do, I did not have that thing. I was not able to, I wouldn't say take orders, but it was just not possible for me.
Mm-hmm.
So then at that point, I decided, let me just quit my job. I can actually do the thing that I'm actually doing for them, for someone else, for freelance services. I could do things that way. In the meantime, I can actually build my YouTube channel, see where that leads, and make art for myself at a time that I choose to make it, and build a life or build systems and things in such a way that you can just do whatever kind of art that you want, whenever you want, wherever you want it. And that was a goal. And I got that. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. But if I may, right? If I mm-hmm. may, once I got that, grass is greener on the other side, right? I wish I could do freelance because it's so hard to do your own personal projects. I wish someone else could tell me what to do or give me ideas to, you know, what to do. But that's the thing. Not being able to take on something.
Okay. So
or work for someone.
So as a indie artist is what we'll call you now.
Right.
You've got the YouTube channel. You've got a killer following on Instagram. You've got your course that you're doing. And I'm just wondering, what are all your revenue streams? Like, how do you keep this ship afloat? And what percentage of what are those revenues?
Right. So 95% of my revenue comes in from the course. Mm-hmm. I don't do sponsorships. I don't do brand. I mean, I don't do brand sponsorships simply because I just feel like it's better to promote our own products. Mm-hmm. And I don't do multiple products because I feel it's better to actually focus on one product and constantly choose to make that thing much better rather than trying to open up multiple things. I've tried to do multiple things in the past. Like I've tried merchandising. I've tried the first run of merchandising was just I was so stupid, young and naive. It was a fantastic lesson in marketing and business. I sold 5 posters. I'll tell you that story later on. right? So so 95% of my revenue comes in from the program. And then say 10%, no, not even 10%, 5% comes in from YouTube. And that 5% mm-hmm. is a good, nice chunk. So, but 95% comes from the one program. Now, thing is constantly make that thing better, serve the existing customers better, and then constantly add to that to make that better. It's like focus, trying to do the thing that I cannot do at all, which is focus on one thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the same problem. Yeah.
that's always a problem, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, well, for us, it's like we built the Foundations program for SVS, which is,
right.
You know, it is our one killer product, right? But then, and so we're like, it's done, you know, let's just get as many people to go through that and improve their lives through the art. But then it's like, well, what's the next thing? You know, let's try how to fix your art. Let's try Children's Book Pro. And so, I'm taking notes here. Like, might be something we need to do.
What do you think would be like the challenges of actually focusing on one thing? And why would one need, because this is a question I'm asking myself, is why would one need to actually say create multiple products? Obviously, there is an upside and a downside, which is the more products you create, the more revenue streams that mm-hmm. comes in. But then you're sort of, this is strictly like a thought exercise. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that put oneself in a situation where you're actually, over time, the product doesn't get better because you don't focus on making it better? And mm-hmm. doesn't that put you in a situation where in the future, where the market just gets equalized and even, mm-hmm. and then we're just going on a rat race of who's going to price themselves low to the bottom? Mm. What do you guys think about this? I know it's sort of making it, I'm questioning.
Well, I mean, I think that's the one benefit to the current model now is that, mm-hmm. I mean, I taught full-time at a university and
right.
You know, sometimes I'd pitch a class. It would take 2 years to get the class into the curriculum.
Ah.
Whereas you can change and bend to what's, I mean, everything's changing so fast now that I don't mm-hmm. I don't think there's any way our curriculum is done. And as a matter of fact, once we were done with it, I went back through and watched every class, and then I realized there's a hole in where the figure drawing was. And so I built a class specifically to fit that hole. Mm-hmm. So I think it's something we're always going to have to be plugging away at. In the future, I mean, now we built the curriculum, but I think now look to fill it with specialty teachers that will add value to specific parts.
That's
of
a
it.
Nice way.
So you start, uh-huh. yeah. So you start to basically the I guess the easy answer or the more correct answer is you customize it mm-hmm. a little bit more. You know, you build a generic thing that covers the broad
everything,
basis, and then you start to get more specific. But the other problem that we run into, we could just spend all week making the curriculum better always, and that would probably be great for us. But the problem is, as artists, mm-hmm. the whole impetus is to create. And we need to build a situation where we can still create. I don't want to be a teacher just showing people how to draw a good box in 3-point perspective. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've got things I want to make and want to build and that I want to say. And any artist, you know, if you get to the point where you're not making something that means something, then you're stagnant. And it would be horrible to be an artist just thinking about technique all the time. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's a catch 22. You're like, you know, you go to make your thing, and then, you know, you want to be employed by, you want stability from a company that a regular paycheck and like somebody telling you what to do. And the second you have that, you're like, oh, I want to do my own thing, but then you don't have money and you don't know what to do. So, you know, it's always this kind of like, I feel like artists now, and you guys can correct me if you don't feel this way, but you're juggling. And it's just whichever ball you're holding at the time, there's two more in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then you throw that ball up and you catch another ball, you know, and you work on that one. And so it just always feels that way to me. And I've yet to crack the code to where I'm just holding one ball and that's the only thing I'm working on.
That's the challenge, huh? Mm-hmm. A couple of things that at least I've learned, I literally learned last week, which I just learned the meaning of sacrifice, what it actually means to sacrifice. So I'm not going to get into the details of it. So I was thrown into a situation where I had to do something, and I had to give up my favorite piece of clothing, right? It was like I had to give my favorite piece of clothing. It was a sort of like a situation, right? I thought I'll just give some sort of a clothing, my clothes, right, for that thing. But I was supposed to, okay, as per that thing, I was to give something that I really liked. Then, mm-hmm, but the thing that I would get out of that would be something that I really want. Then I was like, so maybe that would possibly be the definition of sacrifice, which is you give something like that you like so that you get something that you absolutely love. And I was like, okay, so I kind of like this art project. So then that made me help a little, make a little bit of shift, say last week, which was like, I have two projects that I wanted to do. I was like, I kind of like this. I really like this, but I love this. And I was like, what can I live without? Maybe I cannot, mm-hmm, live without this one. But so that was a interesting thing, because I'm sort of very interested in the idea of sacrifice very lately, because it's a problem that I myself struggle with, and I see a lot of folks, artist types, struggle with, which is we have very many projects and things that we want to do, but the very idea, the very nature of actually getting good at things sort of lies in giving up certain things for a very short period of time, and then sort of going in a very unidimensional way to the top, and then sort of getting good at that point, and then you can choose to jump ship to a thing, but you have leverage at that point, or leverage or sort of perspective or vantage point. That's something that I've been sort of mulling on for a while, mm-hmm, and yeah. Sacrifice.
That's good. I mean, we talk about that a lot here, uh-huh, Jake and I, especially about, you know, the term that we use for that is opportunity cost.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good thing.
Get rid of everything else. And so, every time I'm making a decision now, I think a lot about opportunity cost. And
right,
then I turn down, like you said, I turn down things that are lukewarm, where in the past I'd be like, oh, sure, I've got a free day, I'll do that. Uh-huh. And I think, okay, what am I not doing because I'm doing this thing I don't really care about that much?
Yeah.
Right.
And it's
right,
important,
right.
You know, you make that decision enough. Like you said, I like that quote you said, is you know, you give up something you like in exchange for getting something that you love.
Love, right.
That's a really, really great quote, because you can mess around with mediocrity and these lukewarm things.
Yeah.
For a long time, instead of making something and building something that you truly love. And then your audience responds to those things that you love, typically too. They love it more than things that I'm, mm-hmm, lukewarm about.
Yeah, I talked about that in my mm-hmm, newsletter this last week, where I was like, you know, do you chase stuff, or do you chase opportunities, or do you make opportunities for yourself? And oftentimes we're so focused on the good stuff that we don't make time for the great, you know? And so it's all kind of the same thing there. So I want to ask you, you're in India, born and raised, right?
Yeah. Born and raised.
Can you tell me, growing up as an artist or a kid who wants to draw, and then going into your adulthood, being that in India, and how would that compare to our experience here in the U.S.? Not that you know our experience here in the U.S., but I'm just curious what it's like being outside of the U.S. trying to make a career as an illustrator, as an artist of some kind.
Well, I would obviously not know how is it over there, but mm-hmm, right here, I mean, there is a very strong basis, or it's pretty much in Asian and Indian cultures, which is like there's a great requirement or pressure put on to get yourself into fields such as the STEM fields, like science, mm-hmm, engineering, technology, medicine. In India, it's especially heavily engineering and medicine. Mm-hmm. So that's the base culture right here. You either go into commerce, you either go into so that you can become an accountant. Accountant gets paid a lot. Engineers, or you go into, you know, like you go into technology, something like that, right? Or medicine. Medicine's a big thing. So I sort of grew up around that culture, but very fortunately, thankfully, because of my own parents, I was not affected by it at all, because my father, he defied his parents to sort of go into the stream of business. Mm-hmm. And my mom, she was like, I'll be broke as heck. Doesn't matter. I'm going to teach. She's a classical Indian dancer. So mm-hmm. then that means this, it's a form of art. And she's like, I'd rather do something that I like and be broke rather than, you know, do something, you know, like other people are telling me. So I was sort of coming from this background. So there was no pressure at home to sort of pursue these fields. But there was no opportunity either. It was like, it's not like I could get a job. Like artists do not get paid. Like it was so horrible 10, 15 years back. It is like, it's really like the job opportunities are so bad. And I even remember my commerce teacher telling me, he's like, yo, what are you going to be, man? Like, I mean, in the class, I was like, oh, I'm going to be an artist. It's like, no, artists don't get paid. And be an accountant, they get paid a lot of money. It's like, fine. Yeah, well, so that was the situation, right? But I was always trying to find ways out. First, I was trying to get into, you know, get out of India, you know, get into America. Well, how do I do that? I don't know. I found this platform called YouTube back then. Mm-hmm. Well, there were lots of, you know, folks out there. You know, I saw a YouTube channel named from an artist, Mark Crilly. He's a great mm-hmm. manga artist, right? One of the OG artist YouTubers on the platform. And I saw his videos. Maybe this is my way out. And started putting out videos. That was back in 2010. I was in 10th grade back then. So I think I'm sort of going off track. So I was sort of trying to find opportunities that would get me into a situation where I would find opportunities to be an artist or a filmmaker. So chose filmmaking because it seemed more possible compared to, say, art, which didn't seem to like, it's like, how do I make money with my drawing? It's so uh-huh. esoteric. That's not possible, right? So yeah. I chose filmmaking as a major in college and chipped away at my video production skills. And then as time went on, you know, just got better at that. And while doing that, I kept on practicing my skills as an artist. And then when I built the right distribution on YouTube, you know, built the right amount of skills where I can actually add value to other people, then it just all clicked. Mm-hmm. I think went off track. I'm not sure. But the idea is I see a lot of people really around me, like they have it much harder than I did. But thankfully, you know, because of my own parents, it's like I was able to, like, you know, go into art despite mm-hmm. not being surrounded, you know, despite being surrounded in a culture that does not encourage it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the deal.
Yeah. So your YouTube channel, you have 500,000 subscribers on YouTube and you have like a handful of videos. Like one video has 5 million views, handful have 2 million, 1 million views.
Goodness.
Like you're really killing it on YouTube. And previously I mentioned Instagram, you've got, you know, almost 200,000, 150 plus thousand Instagram mm-hmm. followers. What's your relationship with making content and
right.
staying active on those versus being a productive artist? And do you see a harmony there, or do you see like friction?
Huge friction, huge big friction. Mm-hmm. I think anyone would know. I mean, you would know. It's very clear, which is. It's always a battle between exactly the kind of project that you want to do, but the project that you want to do is not easily marketable to, mm-hmm. you know, as a piece of content on social media that goes viral. And then you would have to actually build distribution, which is your social media platform, so that you can actually sell your projects or products at a particular thing. And it's always like you're running two businesses, two ships at the mm-hmm. same time. And it is like one ship is creating a different product, which is a content engine. The other ship is the kind of project that we would want to make, that we would want to, you know, monetize. You know, it's the art. It's our picture book, children's book, comic book, illustrator. You know, it's like it can be anything, right? There was a huge amount of friction for a very long time until very recently. That is because, I mean, just like I have automized things in such a way where I don't have to worry to some extent about finances. And also, like, I found a harmony with YouTube in a way that, okay, I am going to actually make evergreen, good, high quality videos that will be relevant 10 to 15 years from now. Mm-hmm. And also at the same time, it is going to be something that I would be interested in, something that I would learn something by the act of doing that video, or something that would add to my skill set or skill toolbox. So, and then I put in all the resources to make it into a video that is really, really good. It's not a properly defined term, but, and since I've started to do that, is like I can actually sit back for a couple of months and not post anything. But at the same time, when I post anything, it doesn't go viral. It doesn't have a great opening weekend, like, you know, like a good movie. But over time, it just snowballs. For example, the video you said, like, it's got 5 million views, right? It's like gaining 1 million views a year. And it's been doing that for the past 3 years right now. So it is like, let's build high quality product. It's pretty much almost like a little product. Each YouTube video is like, it's like how do you build a product? It's like you find a target audience, find what exact problem do they have, find a very specific niche that you can serve in such a way that you can be unique in that particular niche, and then build something that is so good that people can't say no to, and then try to make it into a product that keeps on fulfilling without your presence of, say, time or labor. And that's what I think a YouTube channel sort of does. That it's like these are like little products that's sort of going out and making money for you, and that's sort of like the strategy I've been sort of using on YouTube, and that has allowed me right now to sit back and just draw what I want. But what I've realized is cash flow, careful what you wish for. And this has been a problem for a year and a half, which is you wished for a financially stable life, you got it, and you can draw whatever you want, you got it. Now there comes the existential weird feelings that I started to get these days, which is like, what am I gonna, you know, do with this to some extent? And that is the battle that I was sort of fighting very recently. It's like, how do I make sense of all these things to some extent? Yeah.
Do you find that, you know, being young and being hungry is great motivation for making things, you know, and making art, and making, you know, you're just into it because you have to be. And do you struggle with that now? I mean, I'm kind of hearing that, like, okay, I've got the thing that I was going for. I mean, kind of like an Olympic medalist, once they win the medal, why am I doing this? And it becomes a little bit harder. Yeah. I mean, I definitely have less output than I thought that I would once SVS became successful and my books became successful. Other things. It's. I mean, I really got to want to do it because I could easily just not do anything and just go on a bike ride.
That's right. Like, right. Yeah.
So do you struggle with that, like bringing meaning to it now? Because before it sort of was the driver of your existence in order to eat and to pay your rent or whatever you have to make. Motivator? You know, how and what was the answer that you came up with in terms of what project you're going to do?
Well, oh boy. Mind if I get a little quote-unquote deep, if you don't... By the way, I'm very young. I'm very young. You guys have a lot of experience, so I'd really love your perspective on these things. And I could be very wrong as well. But these are the things that...
How old are you?
I'm 28.
28, okay.
Same here.
I can see that. Yeah. Are you sure? You seem 24. Come on, Lee. Are you old enough to drink?
I'm going backwards. I'm like Benjamin Button. Every year. Oh.
There you go. You make a video, YouTube video every year. Age backwards. But
well, that's amazing that you are able to do that in you know, roughly a decade from 18 to 28. That's amazing. I mean, you are definitely still young, and now you've got this really nice base. Okay, so what do you do? What's the motivation and what's the answer?
So then I was like, okay, why do I, now I'm still trying to refine this way of thinking, right? I'm sort of banking on all the great psychologists and all these folks that came before, right? Hope they're right, fingers crossed. So I'm like, okay, why do I do what I do? Well, I do what I do so that I don't suffer more stupidly than I have to. Then that means, because if I don't do anything, what happens is sort of like you either, it's a weird tenet, I'm not sure if this way of thinking is right or not, which is you either move forward in life, either in little steps or little ways, or it's simply just withering away in a very backward format. Mm. It can be very slow. It doesn't have to be fast, but it just happens to sort of go, you're going down. And so you have an option, you have a choice. The choice is this: you can wither away and you will be a burden to yourself. And then not only you'll be a burden to yourself, you will actually be a burden to other people. And the suffering that you actually create will not just be borne by you, but it'll be sort of, you'll be sharing that with a lot of people. So that is one. Now, if you keep going down that route, then you get really worst dark parts of humanity that you sort of see. And that's the part where you get sort of scared. It's like, man, I'm capable of doing those things. You know, that's the part where you sort of get to these really weird things that you see on TVs, like random people going into really dark places. So then, okay, so then what should I do? Should I just sit around and not do anything? All right, you know what, Neil, maybe I shouldn't sit around and not do anything. Maybe I should take up some projects, or no, not projects. I should do something useful. Okay, well, I can do something useful for myself, right? What would that be? It's like build things around me so that I am a functioning human being. And then can I, now comes to the question of, okay, can I build something useful for other people? Great. But do I have the skills to do that? I can just draw. All right. So maybe I can, so the way I design projects right now is sort of like closing the loop, which is trying to, trying to see what kind of things can be either a book, or it can be either something that would provide someone an experience. It can be an animated short film, right? It can be anything that would provide someone an experience where they try to understand themselves much better on an individual level, right? So that is the criteria for me at this point to choose some sort of a project, which is because I'm curious about understanding myself. And like, how can I sort of, you know, understand or help others to sort of understand themselves. Yeah.
That makes sense. It's kind of like we're all on this this treadmill.
Yeah.
And if you stop walking, you just go backwards. And if you want to go forward, you actually have to run.
that is true. That is true.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Do you know,
but also I'm just going to sort of finish that thing, which is, I think I feel, I'm just putting this on myself so that I don't go back, which is, I just feel like there's a moral responsibility or some sort of like the word duty. I kind of like that these days, you know, for you to actually take something like one of those parables you used to share on a few YouTube videos, right? Like God gave people pebbles or gifts or something, and people go out and do something, and then they come back. It's like you've been given something, and you got to use that, and whatever that thing may be, you just go out, use it, see how that thing comes up, and you'll never know what, you know, beautiful things that you can create. So yeah, well, okay. That just went in a complete...
I want to know the pebble story now. I don't have the pebble.
Oh, that's a good story, Jake. You should say that.
It's the parable of the talents from New Testament, where there's a guy who gives his servants they're called talents, and we use that term these days for like your gifts and your abilities to like create things. But in New Testament times, a talent was an actual like unit of monetary measurement. And so the essentially it, you know, he gives it to his servants, and one of them buries them in the ground to protect them. And one of them, I think, goes out and loses them, and another one goes out and bring and is able to like spend his invest his money and comes back, you know, with more talents than he was given. And the person who buried them in the ground still just had what it was given. They didn't use that, they didn't invest it, they didn't try to make anything more of it. And so it was just like, hey, you've been given these gifts, you've been given these abilities, don't bury them, go out and use them and make something of yourself. And that's, you know, that's something I try to live by. Here's what I want to see for you, Kesh. This is what I want to see you do next. I don't know if you're asking for this or not. Uh-huh. You've got this amazing program that teaches people how to draw. And I just scrolled through your entire Instagram feed while we were talking. And you have come so far. Like, your first post was 2015, and here we are 8 years later, and that drawing was student work at best, junior high student work at best. And I look at your stuff now, and you have such a defined, clear style that's unique to you. And so you've got the style, you've got a YouTube channel that's healthy, you know, you post good quality content, you've got your course that people can learn how to draw like you. So I think the next step is you need to make something like an animated short, like you're saying, or a graphic novel. And I would say if comics might be the better option, because animated shorts take a long time, they cost a lot of money, and they don't make a lot of money, right? Unless you're like going to, you know, I think of the guy who made the short for Adventure Time, who turned that into a 10-season series, right? You know, if that's the route, then go ahead and make that short as a pitch for something bigger. But I think a smaller stepping stone is to make the graphic novel or to make the comic series and have it be a character that people attach themselves to, that they love, that they see goes through trial and hardship and comes out on the other side. Essentially, everything that you believe and talk about, you could share through these stories, through this story that you tell. And then you have another thing to sell. Not that it all has to be about commerce, but you have a product that you could sell. But then that thing itself is advertisement for your courses, you know, you've got the YouTube platform to promote that thing as well. You launch a Kickstarter for this, or you find a publisher, and I think you're off to the races. So if you're looking for your next two-year-long project, I think it's write a story, draw it, get it out there, and it will blend so well with everything else that you're doing.
I'm sort of doing something similar. I'm not sure. Actually, I'll give this another solid thought. I started doing a 6-page comic so that, you know, I want to see what the world tastes like. Mm-hmm. But weirdly, I just feel like it's easier for me to make an animated short rather than a comic. I know it sounds so weird. Because I think we've figured out a process and like found the right people. I think it's sort of like a faster way, because I was making this comic. I was like, the time that I made this comic, I could actually make the short film. But you know, I'll actually think about this. I'll think give about this it. Solid thought. Actually, one of the questions from the newsletter, right, which was like, what would your work, you know, what would your work want to look like in 5 years? That's a great question for anyone. It's a bunch of short films. Bunch of short films turned into feature films, one of them into features.
I was just going to say, if animation comes, you know, easier to you or better to you, that is a beautiful medium that can really touch people, like impact people. You know, if there isn't a commercial aspect to what you need to do with this, then make those animated shorts, put them in festivals, get them out there as far as possible. Yeah. And that could lead to you being like someone who can do a full length animated thing, you know, and really dig in there.
How do you animate quickly? I want to know the secret sauce.
I don't animate. That's the deal right there.
He's a director.
I just do the character designs, and you just take all the money you make in one side, just throw it away in the other one. You're set and good to go. So that's the way it's the old fashioned route of throwing money at things. But also at the same time. So since I do come from a film background, that I've observed and watched a lot of films, I'm really efficient at in terms of the exact kind of shots that we want. So that saves a lot of time in terms of, you know, like how we put this thing together. So yeah, and the next thing that we're sort of working on is like a solid music video, because I feel like that's like a nice container, like a super solid, well-made animated short music video. And, you know, that would possibly put my work, one, on the map. Two, we could make something that we're really proud of, which is like minimum viable product for the next project, which I hope to turn to a feature film, because mm-hmm. that's the goal. Like, I'm a filmmaker. I need to make films rather than just do these things.
Yeah.
But comics, I'm enjoying comics though. I'll tell you that. I never got comics, but I'm looking at certain comics. I got a comic from called 1984. It was an illustrated version of 1984. It was just fabulous to look at, and the deep story and the way it sort of went. I was like, now I see why people want to make comics.
Yeah, I mean, if comics isn't, you know, something that you've grown up reading and you don't read them, then it doesn't seem like an obvious path to go down. But it absolutely is like a genuine, you can make a genuine connection with people through form, because you internalize through the images, through the words, you internalize the story, I think, or the experience, sometimes a lot more than I think film. Because, you know, I'll sit here and watch a movie with my kids and they're like on the phone half the time, you know, and they'll look up and watch it, and then they'll check something. I even do that too. Like, I'll be like watching a movie and pause really quick, and, you know, while the movie's still going, I'm like, well, what other movie was that actor in? So I'm searching, like, how tall is Tom Cruise? You know, and I'm like, you know, Googling and stuff. But when you're reading a comic, like, you can only do that thing when you're doing it. You can't the comic doesn't
sitting with something sitting with something's a different experience than watching something. As much as I love films too. I mean, we watch movies all the time, but same thing. It's a moment to moment experience when you're watching a film. It's linear. But when you're sitting with a book or a comic, it seems like space moves in a different way. Time moves in a different way, because you can kind of go back a panel and forward a panel and then notice something different each time.
Right.
I find that I don't watch, I mean, I know there's film connoisseurs that watch films hundreds of times. I'm not one of them. Typically, even for the good movies, I might watch them twice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
a good book
or a comic, I will look at it tons of times. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll just have it out on my desk and just kind of, while I'm on the phone, I'm looking at it. You know what I mean? It's just a different relationship with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd love to see us comic.
Yeah.
From you. It'd be cool.
So it's all different mediums. It's like one thing I've noticed though is like comics seems like a very nice 21st century medium for people trying to disconnect from the constant dopamine filled world, which is because books, a better thing would be like nonfiction books, because it makes you actually imagine the whole scene. Whereas comics is like a nice good next step from that, which is like it's not as fun as like a, it's not a dopamine ride like a movie, or video games. Right.
Slower burn.
Yeah. And then you sort of seem to train a lot of other parts of your brain where you're like, you know, I need to maybe develop certain aspects that helps me sit and be bored and not be on a constant search for some high all the time. So I've been doing this thing called like the monk mode. Apparently this is something we just stay off all social media and do not watch any short form content and just only consume long form content. And if you feel bored, you read books. It's nice.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Nice.
We have a thing around my house called NPP. No phone policy. And so my son hates it. It's such an annoying parent thing to say. Like he picks up his phone. We're like, NPP, NPP. No phones.
Like all day? It's like literally all day?
Well, if we're watching a movie, it's definitely NPP. No phones. Like Jake's saying, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. We put the phones up if we're watching a movie. But on short trips too, I noticed like, you know, he's 12. My son's 12 and he just got the new phone. Uh-huh. So even on a 30-minute drive, that seems like a long drive to him. And he wants content. I'm like, no, it's got to be at least 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're not bringing an electrical device, you know.
I know. I tell my kids, too.
That's crucial.
I'm like, look out the window. You know, you might see something that you wouldn't expect. You know, I grew up, you know, well before phones, so I was always looking out the window on our car rides and just like thinking about, oh, I wonder who lives in that house, and oh, I wonder, you know, what it would be like to climb that mountain, and just. There's some imagination stuff that you're not opening yourself up to when you're always looking at the little glass screen.
You know, this is a little side note, but I was having this conversation with my wife the other day about this exact topic, like how things translate to different media. And one of the things we noticed that, you know, things can be really good as what books and short films do is give importance to small, meaningful moments. Whereas... big feature films are these giant things. And so the conversation led us to talking about like the Polar Express. The book was amazing.
Chris Van Allsburg book. Yeah, yeah.
It should have been a short film.
Yeah.
But instead they took this little moment that was really nice and really intimate and they needed to fill 2 hours. And so they needed chase scenes and wacky things happening. And it just seems so goofy. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad you're going to do shorts because like the length of the film needs to match the content, not just like, okay, I have an idea, 2 hours, no matter what the content is, you know?
That's right. you know, literally we were talking about it today because most TV shows has been just lengthened for the sake of getting more seasons and episodes. Mm-hmm. Those stories can be just like 5 episodes. It's like, stop wasting people's time.
Like The Walking Dead did 14, 15 seasons. Oh, it should have been 2 seasons. You know, it was a good show in the beginning, but golly. Yeah.
It's huge time wasters in some extent, to some extent.
So that brings me to my next sort of thing. We're getting to the top of the hour here. I just want to ask, like, what is inspiring you right now? Like, what are you into as an artist? Movies, books, you know, music. I don't care. Like, what's really inspiring you at this time?
Weirdly, business to some extent. Like how can I build a business? This is the question that I'm asking. How can I build a business that takes 4 hours a week to maintain and upkeep that makes $1 million plus a year in revenue? So what kind of the products should it be? What are strategies and things that people are doing? So it is like, okay, it's like I'm at a stage. It's like I need to triple what I do in order to get there. Mm-hmm. Then what would I need? What systems, what kind of a product should I make in order to do that? Now, that sort of fascinates me for 2 reasons. One is like, okay, for something to do, money is not always a great indicator of the quality of a certain product, but if you keep the intention of creating a great freaking product in mind, money can sort of, it can be some sort, sometimes it can be a measurement. We can't get lost in it, obviously. So I'm really thinking, okay, where is the intersection of art and business in terms of, say, certain kinds of products that we can make that would just make a lot of money? It's like, that's one of the interests. One of the interests. Two is like, let's make a freaking feature animated film by the end of, say, in the next 12 to 16 months. Those two things are sort of, you know, really sort of getting on me.
Maybe those two things are the same thing. You know what I mean? You have the big project that's a business, and it's the feature film. It's everything wrapped in one.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's like when you ask the question of how do you make money with art, I just come to realize our thing is like just make movies. It's hard to get in, but that's the big business right there in terms of, say, right, to some extent. So yeah, making movies, building businesses. Building good products that sort of runs on its own, that adds value more than it takes, sort of, and then just does good things. Something about that. Awesome. It's almost artistic to some extent, creating something. It's like this.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's super cool. Well, Kesh, do you have anything else from Lee, or should we wrap it up?
No, that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff to think about. I love hearing too about other people in other mediums. Like, I never sit down at my desk thinking I'm going to make a movie, and so I love just like all of a sudden, like, what kind of movie would I make? And oh man, that would be so exciting.
No, I'd love to come back, say 17 or 18 months from now, and say, hey guys, and like, this is how we made this feature freaking film. We just launched.
Please
it.
Do.
Oh yeah, that would be nice.
That would be awesome.
Yeah,
that'll be
Let's
nice.
Talk to you
that'll
in 2025.
Be, that'll be very, very nice. 2025. That's right. Yeah. Booked and scheduled.
That's good.
What, you know, here's a question. Like, what would the people listening to this podcast would really like to learn? You know, like, what one or two things that they would like to take away from what I do that would add value to their lives? What can I sort of share or tell that from what I've done that would really just, they can walk away with a solid takeaway?
Yeah.
I think you've already done that, the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Good.
Let me
ask you a question, though. This is a little side little thing that I want to add just because I'm so stupid and I know we're wrapping up. But, you know, we're in an age now where it doesn't have to be just a book or a movie or a short film. You know, there was, I can't remember which draw. Oh, it was Scott Robertson's drawing book. I don't know if you've seen it, but I open up the book, there's lessons and stuff, and then you can, you know, hit a QR code or something. I can't remember what the book mechanism is, but you can then watch a video of some section. And do you have any interest in maybe that, like, say you have a comic and then somebody clicks the QR code on their phone and they see a chase scene or something between these two characters or something.
Right.
And so the vehicle's a comic, but then there's an animated add-on sort of. It's just a kind of a multimedia
experience. It's like, I mean, depends on how it's sort of structured and paced, maybe, because at the end of the day it comes down to the person who's consuming it and the experience, and it's almost like ease of use to even some extent, right? So what is like the good difference between a good YouTube video and a bad one? It's like, good YouTube video, they don't take too long, they have, they're edited to the crisp in some places. It's like easy to consume, convenience, right? So it is like, maybe if there's some sort of another technology that would make it more convenient, maybe it'll be a nice way. I've seen Bobby Chu make a moving comic. That was that was quite the interesting thing. I think he made it for Nico and the Sword of Light. So
Ryan Woodward did as well with his baseball, future baseball comic. I don't know if you...
I remember that.
My opinion on the animated comics thing is that don't make sense. Let an animation be an animation, let a comic be a comic.
You're a boomer. Jake, you're a boomer.
I
don't appreciate.
You know, show me someone that is actually successful doing that, because they've all tried, and I'll eat my hat.
because that was a boomer thing to say. It takes pretty much the same affair, right?
I'll eat my hat.
Yeah.
All right, boomer.
It takes pretty much the same effort, right? Like mm-hmm. you can just make an animated short film rather than a comic at that point.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, just make a comic or an animation. Good.
A comic, you don't need a studio. I mean, that can happen on your own time in your, you know, in your own home. But that is, animation, you need people. So much more. So
yeah.
Hold on. Surprisingly, weirdly, actually, I'll tell you, surprisingly, it took very little for the 48-hour comic, the animated short film that we made. So I think technology is just getting good to a point where you just can make it in a shorter period of time.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Well, I mean, maybe in 6 months, you'll just feed it all your prompts into an AI animation machine.
And that'd be cool.
And just spit out something. I don't know. I want to see the artist's hand in the work, you know, and I know the people say that, the AI will be able to mimic the artist's hand. So you'll be able to get that too. I'm like, well, the AI doesn't know what to make art about. And then the argument is, well, they'll figure that out too, you know? So who knows? You still have to make stuff though. You can't leave it to the machines.
Right. Yep. curious to see how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't want to turn this into an AI debate. We'd be here for another hour.
All right. So should we wrap up and go ahead and film our intro and outro?
Yeah, let's do that. Good talking to you, Keshe, and thank you so much.
All right. All right. Thank you. Thank you. By the way, it means a lot. Quite the honor to be here. Been listening to this podcast for a long time. So yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Oh, that's awesome. Good to meet you.
All right. That was Keshe. This is your first introduction to him, right, Lee? Like,
yeah, I was unfamiliar with him before this. It was fun to talk to him.
Yeah. I was fascinated. I've known Keshe for a while there, and I talk about that in the intro, but it was cool to actually interview him and kind of hear a lot about things from his perspective. You know, this is a guy who isn't, he's a lot deeper than like what is cartoony sort of surface you know, projection would lead you to believe. This is a guy that's really thinking about long term. How do I make something substantial? How do I help people in the process? And I was really impressed with what he was saying.
Yeah. He's going about it in a very calculated way. And you know, he's figured out YouTube angle. I have to figure out YouTube, by the way. It seems like all of our guests have this all figured out. And I don't have anything. But yeah, to be so young and to knock it down like that. I mean, he's got it. He definitely got it going on.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll wrap it up there. Again, you can find Keshe on keshart.in. And from there, there's links out to his YouTube channel. There's links to his Instagram account, and actually, absolutely check out his drawing course that he's got going on there. Really killer stuff. And with that, we will take us out. This podcast is brought to you by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Your hosts today were Lee White and Jake Parker. Will Terry couldn't join us. He's out on assignment. He is doing a project about self-publishing. He's learning the ins and outs of self-publishing right now. So he'll have stories to tell when he comes back all about that. Podcast produced by Daniel Tu. That's Daniel Tu, and you can find his work at daniel2.co. Special thanks to show notes wrangler Lily Howell for keeping our show notes in line. And special thanks to our chief operations officer, Lisa Fott, for keeping the lights on at the SVS headquarters here. Now, go draw something.